Welcome to Off the Cut, a podcast where we talk about building, making,
and answering all of your questions.
I'm Eric from Spensley Design Co.
And I'm Zach from Zach Builds. If you have a question that you would like us to answer on air, you can send it to offthecutpodcast@gmail.com.
You can find both of us on YouTube, Instagram, and unfortunately, because we have to keep up with kids, you can find us on TikTok too.
All right, now let's get into the show.
Welcome to Off the Cut episode 104 for Tuesday, February 27th, 2024. And we want to continue to remind you that the absolute worst podcast available on Apple and Spotify is in fact the Greensuiters podcast. But the best place to buy woodworking tools is KM Tools, baby.
KM Tools. That's right. It's for woodworkers by woodworkers, and if it's in their store, it's in their shop, or it was just straight up made by Jonathan and his amazing team behind the scenes.
Like the new box joint jig that they came out with.
So I haven't got my hands on that, but maybe this weekend we'll talk to Jonathan about that. I'd be interested to know what the design process was like.
Well, we had an email string going on about that, about getting them back on to talk about product ideation and stuff like that.
Yes, that's very true. So maybe any listeners at home, if you got any questions about what it takes to get a woodworking tool from idea to market, send it into the email address and we'll get Jonathan to actually answer all that live on air. Yeah. We'll grill him.
Well, if you're looking for a great place to buy tools, head over to camtools.com. The cool thing is a big portion of their sales goes directly towards the Katz Moses Woodworkers with Disabilities Fund, which gets tools and resources into the hands of folks who need it most. Mm-hmm. And this ad reads not just for us, it's for you guys too, because every month we're giving away a $50 KM Tools gift card. All you got to do is head over to patreon.com/offthecutpodcast and you're automatically entered in to win.
That's right.
But now that we got that out of the way, you know what else doesn't suck? We've got a guest podcast with us tonight. What?
For the grand podcast?
For the grand podcast. Well, we've got a guest with us tonight. I got this intro. He's going to like it. Oh. You've seen him on infomercials trying to get you buy best of the 80s cassettes. You've seen him on the big screen on films like Rocky, Rocky 2, Rocky 3, and Rocky 4. You've seen him at Olive Garden. You've seen him beat The Rock in an arm wrestling competition. Adding yet another mediocre Canadian to the show, please welcome Dom from M Inspired Living.
Based on that intro, my life sucks. Like, I haven't done any of those things.
You're telling me, I thought you were an extra in Rocky 2.
Rocky 2? I was alive when Rocky. I think I'm probably the only one here that was alive when it came out.
when did that movie come out?
Yeah, let's see.
Early 80s? No, Rocky 2, that came out in
Rocky 2, Rocky 2. Yeah, Rocky 2 was, I was alive in Rocky 2.
Were you?
You're right.
Yeah. All right.
Like 82.
I wasn't even a gleam of my parents' eyes at that point.
No, I don't even think my parents loved each other at that time.
I probably chaperoned your parents at the school dance.
No, you were their scuba instructor, weren't you?
Yeah, no, I can't swim. I can't. What kind of scuba instructor would I be?
That's all right. Zach can't swim either.
Yeah, that's true. I think I told the story on the podcast, but I went and like signed up to do scuba diving in the open ocean, not knowing how to swim. Because my friends were like, it's cool, you'll figure it out in the ocean. I was like,
you have a tank of oxygen. What do you want?
Yeah, exactly.
You can't drown.
If you sink, just walk back to shore. It'll be no big deal.
You just inflate your vest with air. You're good.
Yeah, no biggie.
Oh. Well, Dom, for people who live under a rock and don't know you, tell the people a little bit about yourself. What do you do? Where are you from? Who the hell you think you are?
I am Dom, as you said. My handle is M Inspired Living. I run a little, you know, woodworking / content creation business from Toronto. I actually live in Zach and I live in neighboring igloos. We live right next door to each other.
That's right. Ooh. Every once in a while, we send up a little smoke signal out of our little igloo chimney.
Yeah.
Do you have the bat signal?
No, we don't. What's bad? We don't have Batman in Canada.
Yeah, that's an American thing.
Our Canadian equivalent.
We're supposed to be getting it next year. That's
eventually. Yeah, we have Beaver Man up here, Derek. Yeah. It's like Batman, but more Canadian.
Wait, hold on. Are you? You swear to God, Beaver Man? You're just screwing with me, right?
Yeah.
He sounds like a more exciting superhero.
Although we do have beaver tails, which is a type of food, which I don't know if you guys have down there.
That sounds like a...
It's like a fried piece of dough.
And then you like put stuff on top of it. A little bit of peanut butter, maybe some maple syrup or something like that.
I don't know. It sounds like a slang name for part of the female anatomy.
Definitely does. I will not say that.
It is what it is. So Dom, how did you come up with M-inspired living? Because we were talking to somebody else and they were like, what's Minspired
living? Yeah, that's everybody. You know what? I'll tell you this. I hate my handle, but I feel like I've gone too far with it and that
interesting.
It's too late to sort of change it because at the time that I came up with it, I didn't really know what I wanted to be. So I wanted sort of like a catch-all. And like Inspired was cool. And M is basically the first initial of my last name. That's where the M came from. But I realized really quick that nobody knew how the hell to say it. Everybody's like Minspired. And then on top of that, like what the hell does that have to do with woodworking at all? Like in...
I think you're in the right, like you had the right idea of taking something that's like nice and broad. Like we say all the time, you know, if you're going to start a social media business, don't pigeonhole yourself really early on. Right. Don't say, you know, like so-and-so's fine woodworking because in the future you might want to branch out and to do something else.
That's the thing, because when I started out, you know, I started my Instagram channel and I had just started playing around with woodworking.
Yeah.
And in my head, I was thinking, what if I hate this? What if I hate woodworking, but I want to continue and I want to transition into something else?
Yeah.
Right. So I wanted something, like you said, that was kind of broad enough to be able to transition. But
yeah,
I've thought several times about just rebranding, but I just feel like I'm too far into it now. And I have a branding iron. Once you have a branding iron, you can't
set it. So yeah.
Yeah.
Once you have a buy a new one.
Yeah, once you get a set of stickers, it's like, that's it.
Yeah, no,
once you invested in this name,
you're done.
Yeah, you buy
one of those laser peckers.
Yeah, well, I think I see a laser cutter in your background there, don't I, Dom? Is that what that is?
Well, I got to work on my background because you guys are all like nice guy, and I got like 2x4s and like bait on the ground. And
I'm in an apartment. Look, I've got all of our wedding stuff over in this corner in a cat tree.
Derek's background or Eric's background is not nice. It's
no,
I'm not going to lie. I'm mildly disappointed that the scuba suit's not hanging off the closet door in the back.
A lot of times it is. A lot of times it is. You know, Eric, every podcast we do, I have to look at your closet door being out of alignment and it bugs me.
Oh, dude, don't get me started. Don't get me started. Yeah, look at that. It
goes from like a half inch at the bottom to a 16th at the top.
No, that's probably about 2.5 inches at the bottom.
Oh, no way. Really?
It is brutal. Like the people who constructed this place had to have been, you know, incompetent to keep it polite.
Yeah, that's large scale construction for you. They don't really care. It's just get it up as quick as possible. Get out.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Dom, tell me.
Just slap like an inch and a half of wood filler on the edge of that wall there. And
build
it out a little bit.
Yeah, you get on the table saw and you like rip something from 2 inches down to nothing and then just glue it on the side.
Yeah.
Yeah. So problem solved. I can't make a YouTube video on that. Why would I bother?
Oh, you definitely could make a YouTube video on it.
Not something that somebody would want to watch. So,
Well, I just wanted to ask Dom how he got started in social media. What was the inspiration? Because I remember when I started, I looked for like people in Toronto who were doing like kind of a similar thing. And I found you, Mark, and Vic all like basically at the same time. So, but I think you started like maybe a year or two before me. So I was kind of curious, like what was your journey like?
Yeah, I started my Instagram channel in 2016. I started it.
Yeah.
And it was just sort of like, I had no woodworking or DIY experience whatsoever before I sort of started this. I worked like for years. I was a buyer for like a steel company here in Toronto. I worked in an office in a shirt and tie.
Yeah.
And one day, so we have a cottage. Zach will know what I mean by a cottage. It's not called a cottage down south. I think you guys would probably call it a cabin or like a lake house or
sure
something like
that. Cottage sounds so much nicer.
Yeah, I guess. I think it's got a different meaning for you guys. It's like, you know, what you guys can call smarties or not what we call smarties, but I digress. So I have this cottage. We're up there for the weekend and we go to, again, Zach will know Blue Mountain, right? We go to Blue Mountain, this little like ski resort area, like a half hour from where my cottage is. And we're looking in the little boutiques and stuff. And my wife sees this, you know, wooden sign inside one of the boutiques for some crazy price that they had it for sale for. And me, never having done any sort of woodworking or anything manual, basically, I could build that thing for you. Right. We're not spending that amount of money on that piece of junk. So we come back home Sunday evening and I go in the garage and I have like a handsaw and a hammer and like a couple pieces of like fence board left over from a fence that I didn't even put up. Someone put it up for me. I spent like the next 3 days like hammering this thing together and, you know, like spray painting the words and they all bled through. A piece of junk, but
you're like, look, honey, it's way better than that garbage at the store.
You know what? I was so proud of it. Like,
oh yeah,
look, I did it. And she was like, is he trying to be nice, right? Like, yeah, that's it's all right. Let's maybe we can hang it in this closet over here.
I know the perfect place behind the laundry machines.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you want me to hang this up in the living room?
No,
absolutely.
That's where it all started. Like I started basically from that. And then, you know, my interest grew and I wanted to learn and get better and make a better sign. And then from there, I started making things with pallets. Right? Because I think everybody starts out like deconstructing pallets.
100%. 100%. And that was like, that was peak pallet furniture era, right?
Oh,
like,
yeah, it was.
2016 to 2019, like pallet furniture was just going absolutely bananas.
It was right in the thick of it. And you know what? I have to say that I was, I think, lucky that I started at that time because it was very forgiving.
Right.
Pallet wood. Right. Like you could take apart a pallet and make the ugliest piece of crap that anybody has ever seen, but it's rustic. And and someone will think it's great. And right. Like, it was good time to start out because it was very forgiving.
What is so captivating about pallet furniture for people? Is it the fact that it's free?
Free.
And you can just kind of, anybody can kind of find the material on the side of the road and then that must be what it is.
Think when you started, right? Like you're like, oh my God, that Ryobi drill that's $50. Like not disparaging anybody starting. You're like, that's a lot of $50 is a lot of money for somebody to just blow.
Sure,
on a hobby. True. And then you're like, okay, so I want to build this sign. Oh my God, I'm spending $150 on lumber to make this. Or on the way to your mother-in-law's house, you're like, oh my God, there are three pallets on the side of the road. Yeah. I won the jackpot.
What?
Sure. You know?
Sure. Yeah, it's a good point. And taking apart a pallet is the worst thing. Do you have one of those big breaker bars specifically for it?
No, you know what? I learned pretty quickly once I got a little more comfortable. I said, you know what? Screw this. Too much work and trouble. And you spend 3 hours taking apart a pallet and then you end up with like 2.5 feet of usable wood from that pallet.
Yeah. Because half of them split.
Yeah.
Or they're like, they have like, you know, suspect markings or stains on them that you don't want to use it and
dog feces.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's how I started out. And then I started up my Instagram to sell the crap palette stuff that I was making.
Okay, so you wanted to do maybe something a little bit more hands-on? Were you looking for something a little bit more physical? And then the Instagram came after that?
Yes, yeah. So okay, like I said, I attempted to make the sign for my cottage. Yeah. And I found that as bad as I was at it and as bad as the sign looked, I enjoyed doing it.
Yeah.
And it was it was a cool hobby that, not the type of hobbies that I had in the past, right? Mm-hmm. And it was different and I enjoyed it. So I was looking for, like Eric said, a more economical way of enjoying that hobby and not having to go out and spend a ton of money. Like I made with tools that I think the same mistake that a lot of people starting out make. And I mean, not necessarily a mistake because you don't want to spend a lot of money, but I went to, you know, Canadian Tire and I bought a bunch of Eric, no, we talked about Canadian Tire, I think, when he came on the For the Gram podcast. But it's like the Canadian Menards.
It's Harbor Freight here. Tools that are very, very suspiciously made.
Yeah.
And it makes Ryobi seem like a Ferrari.
Oh yeah, they're like Festools compared to So I went out and bought a bunch of Mastercraft stuff that was Canadian Tire's house brand, and you learn as you go. I bought their planer that
a planer?
They did. At the end of the day, it wasn't really that much cheaper than going out and buying, you know, something decent, the DeWalt, you know, the DW735 there, I think it is. I bought this thing and it was the loudest. It sounded like a Boeing 747 was taking off from my garage when I run a piece of pine through the thing.
Yeah, I have the Mastercraft planer pulled up on my browser right now, and it is $529.
Yeah, no, it's
not cheap.
Yeah,
it's like.
But do you have a 10% off coupon and get a free magnetic bit tray and three batteries too?
Here's the thing with Canadian Tire: if you wait for the sales, it'll go from like $529 to $108.
Jesus. Let's say you get a win for like $300.
Yeah. So. But they probably have a ridiculous warranty, right? Anything happens to you take it in, and a guy who doesn't even make eye contact with you just goes, "Oh, here's another one," right?
I don't know. I never got that. Like I sort of like just gave up on it when I, you know, started to learn a bit more and said, you know what, let me just get something that's not like. I tried to run hard maple through that thing.
Oh no. Probably just bent the blades backwards, right?
The whole machine like vibrated itself right out of the garage
into the trash can.
So you got all the Canadian Tire tools, and you slowly upgraded. And then what did it become like? I need to sell this so that I can actually afford to buy these tools. Basically,
yeah. That's basically what it was. I would sell something and work my way up, get a little bit better tool.
And, that's the hustle, right? You know, sell a piece, buy a new tool, sell a piece, buy a new tool. Like that's how you build up your shop in the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. Like when I did my first dining table and I didn't have a track saw. So I borrowed someone else's track saw, and then the money I made on that dining table, which I significantly underpriced learn as you go. I took that profit and I went and bought myself a track saw. So now I was able to, you know, start doing stuff with a track saw and sort of built my way up that way.
I think that's a misconception is viewers see everybody on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, YouTube, or whatever, and they're like, man, must be nice to just have 50 grand to go out and buy all of your tools at once. It's like, no, like,
yeah,
it was a long road.
Yeah.
When people follow you on social media, they're tuning in to like, you know, season 10 of your life, essentially, right? They didn't see season 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you know, like the slow buildup. And I mean, probably like Dom said, a lot of that stuff happens pre-social media, right? Like I know how, like I got all my tools before I ever got interested in social media. And then the so
because you did it professionally.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like, but people don't see the, you know, that build up portion. They just see this person with all these tools and then, oh, it must be nice.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So, Dom, one of the things that we're always interested in, because Zach and I have had next to zero luck in this avenue, is actually selling stuff to people. Like, you still sell stuff to people, don't you?
I do. Not as much as I, like, I've... And I'm grateful for it that I've gotten to sort of the point where I can pick and choose,
right?
What I'm interested in, what will be a decent, you know, project. But that was something that when I started out, because I had no intention of doing content creation,
right?
I was
just like,
hey, I want to make some money. If I can sell this, you know, pallet coffee table and make $100, that's amazing, right? That's great,
right?
But then I sort of started selling stuff, and I got to the point where I had to make a decision. Am I going to try and be a full-time woodworker and try to make money selling woodworking stuff and quit my job?
Right.
Or am I going to, stick with my job? And I sort of, had a conversation with my wife and said, look, I'd like to try this. I always wanted to do my own thing. I never liked working for somebody and having to, hey, can I have an extra 15 minutes for lunch today? Because my kid's, doing a play at school. I never liked that, right?
No soup for you.
Exactly. Right? So you know what? I'm going to give it a shot. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't go well after, the first year, thankfully my wife has a really good job too. So that made things a little bit easier, right? But I said, if things don't go well in 6 months or 12 months from now, I just go get, another job, right?
Yep.
And go back to it. But from the day I left my job, I sort of in my own head, without saying to anybody, I said, I'm going to do whatever it takes to never have to go back and
work for somebody else
ever again.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I'm never seeing any of these dorks ever again. Yeah. I'm out of here, losers.
And I hustled. I can't tell you, I did cold calls. I would go out and knock on doors, and that charcuterie boards were just becoming a big popular thing, right? It went from people not knowing what they were to suddenly everybody wanted a charcuterie board, right? So again, you're getting into woodworking. That's pretty easy. It doesn't get any easier than that, really. There's very hard to make a big mistake on a charcuterie board.
Sure.
Right? So I walked into I don't know how many restaurants and bars and golf course, clubhouses, and with samples in the back of my truck. And hey, give them a business card and I'm so-and-so, I do this, you guys have it. And a lot of places just showed me the door and said,
right.
But for every 10 places that did that, if I got lucky, one place said, yeah, okay, let's see what you got. And I sort of built up business that way. And for the first few years of my business, where before the content creation thing started to pick up a bit, that's how I paid my bills, was charcuterie boards. I sold literally thousands of charcuterie boards. Right.
Was it mostly bulk sales that you were doing? You go into business and they'd order 100 from you or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I did a lot of bulk sales to restaurants and hotels and that sort of thing. And then I do the odd market and show, especially around Christmas time. And those were
one of a kind show and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, I never did anything that big. I did them on a smaller scale.
Okay.
Because those big ones, I did
with those.
They're hit and miss. I've done shows, honestly, where I've done really well, where I'd go back no problem because I made good money at them.
Sure.
I did other shows where I'd stand there all day and not make one sale.
Right.
So it's hit and miss. I the thing with them, the way I always looked at them, and I did a lot of them for a few years in those early years, was I looked at it as sort of a marketing exercise to keep me from getting discouraged. If I went and did a show and I sold nothing that day, I said, well, you know what? 32 people took my card.
Right.
And maybe, one of those people, and it has happened. I've had people still to this day call me and say, hey, I met you at such and such market 3 years ago. Can you make me a charcuterie board? And right. So cool. You have to sort of look at markets that way. Otherwise, they become really discouraging because some of them are really expensive. Like you're spending like $1,000
to get a
booth, go do this market, right? And a thousand, like compared to the one of a kind, $1,000 is nothing.
Yeah, I don't. One of a kinds, it's like this big show for people selling homemade stuff here in Toronto, and I think it's like $5,000 for the weekend or something like that. It's it is not cheap. It's kind of bordering on big business.
Yeah, and it's not. You have to sort of go through a process to even be accepted into that.
Yeah,
and can't just have anybody.
They have all sorts of crazy rules, like you can't run out of inventory throughout the week, otherwise they kick you out. And like you have to have it all has to be Canadian made. There can't be like any American products or Chinese products or anything. It's like very strict. They've got all sorts of crazy rules.
I know a few people that I've met through doing these markets that, you know, they got into the one of a kind show and they basically spend 9 out of the 12 months of their year preparing for this one show.
Yeah.
Wow.
So you're throwing all your eggs into that basket and hoping that, you know, it's going to go really well for you.
Yeah.
So then what kind of made you, did you start to get into social media to try to like drive more business to the product sales?
Yeah, that's 100% what it was. Because at the time when I started Instagram, like I said, in 2016, this whole content creation thing wasn't a thing yet.
Right.
There was... Mm-hmm. There was very few people I knew who were sort of like maybe getting a free drill here and there.
Bottle of glue.
You know, getting a bottle of glue. But
that was big back in the day.
Like nobody like even
those little freebies.
Yeah.
Funny.
Pencil.
Yeah, but that's like in sort of the maker, woodworker, DIY space, nobody was like getting paid or doing campaigns with brands. That was, it wasn't a thing yet.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, I started my page just as a way to, you know, feature what I was making and try to, you know, sort of have like a digital business card to say, hey, you know, if you want to see some of what I'm doing, because I didn't even have a website yet at that point.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Right? I don't think anyone had a website when they first started. Right.
And how did it work for you? Did you find it to be like a good kind of lead generation?
Yeah. Yeah. It was like I did. More, I think things changed when Instagram went more video.
Yes.
When it was a picture, a photo app, it was a lot easier to get business from Instagram.
Yeah. And I used to finish photo. Somebody's like, I want that.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
You're not selling anything off videos now.
No, what do you say? Because the video is showing a process. It's hard. Like, you get now and then you'll get someone messaging you saying, you know, hey, can you make me this or that? But like most of my actual business these days in terms of like product is from either word of mouth or from repeat clients.
Makes sense.
Right? It's not, like, again, I can't say I don't get any business from Instagram, but it's a lot less than it was in those early days.
Mm-hmm. So then what kind of morphed you into a content creator? Is it just like you slowly started to realize that you kind of gaining more traction through that avenue?
Yeah. I mean, as my following started to grow and I realized I liked making videos, right? I liked, you know, posting nice pictures and that sort of stuff. And then as, you know, brands start reaching out to you, you say, hey, you know what? Maybe instead of having to sell 400 charcuterie boards, I can do this one ad.
Yeah.
Right.
And not be sanding for, you know, 3 weeks of sanding charcuterie boards, right?
Yeah.
And you can dick around on the ad too. Like you can screw around, have fun with it, let some of your personality come out and you're like, wait.
That's right.
That's going to pay me the same amount as all of this work.
Yeah.
Then you get stuck. Then you're like, oh, well, I'm only going to do ad spots from now on for the rest of my life.
Well, that's the thing. That's the tough balance because I've said this as well before, because I've had people say to me, why do you still do like, you know, because if somebody reaches out to me and they want one charcuterie board, 9 out of 10 times I'll say yes and I'll do it. Right. Mm-hmm. And I've had people say to me, like, why? Well, for, because it, and it's true, because sometimes I'll be really busy. I'll be in the middle of doing, like, you know, filming a video for a campaign for, you know, X brand.
Sure.
And I'll, you know, get a message and like somebody wants one charcuterie board. And like in the back of my mind, they'll be like, what the fuck? Can you swear on this podcast?
Oh, yeah. Go for it. Oh,
yes. It's like, what the fuck, man? I don't want to do this piece of crap now. Like, I'm going to make $80 on this. But,
well, now do you find that like when somebody reaches out to you for something like that, like obviously you don't really care about the money from one charcuterie board, but is it like part of then keeping up with your, is it like, I don't know, like it's part, it, you do it to help your social media business because that person is reaching, that's like a follower on Instagram, well, that's reached out to you, right?
That's right. And the other thing for me that I try to keep that part of the business alive is, I think we all know the content creation side of the business is very competitive. It's not easy. And if you sort of let that stuff go and, you know, things are great today, they were great yesterday, I don't know what tomorrow is going to bring in terms of content creation. The brands one day are good. Eventually they're going to stop knocking on the door, and because they're going to find other doors to go to. And you
somebody
hope that,
will do it cheaper.
That's right. And you hope that another brand will come along to replace the one that just left, but you never know.
You never
know if that stuff's going to dry up suddenly one day. So it's good to have, not let all of that stuff go, especially with returning, you know, clients. I never say no, because once you say no one time, if they really need it, they're going to go find someone else to do it for them. And that's going to be their their new go-to person.
For sure. For sure. Right? I mean, yeah. Like how many times, if you call up a garage to have your oil changed and they say, no, we're not going to do it, you're not going to call them again. Right. Yeah. So
no.
Yeah.
So you're over it.
Yeah, for sure.
So with your business, like what percentage of revenue comes from social media, we'll call it, versus, you know, product sales?
So like content creation, you mean?
Yeah.
At this point, I'd say we're probably like 75-25 split.
Okay.
Like 75%
so predominantly is content creation.
Content. Which has really sort of made that switch in the last 2 years, maybe. I sort of, maybe a couple years ago, like just after the pandemic hit, is when I sort of made that switch and started making more from the content than I was making from product.
Interesting.
So, genuine question, because Zach and I have tried to monetize Instagram.
Yeah.
With varying success. Yeah. And you live in Canada, which means you guys were never had access to the windfall of cash that Instagram was throwing out during the Reels bonus days and all that kind of stuff. You cannot make money natively on Instagram as a Canadian.
No.
So
well, just how recently,
you make
I don't know if Zach got this feature yet, but I had got like maybe a month ago, I can have ads play on my profile now.
I'll
go to my profile and they scroll through my posts. After every whatever 5 posts, an ad comes up.
Oh, right? Interesting. I didn't get that, but I haven't been on Instagram in like a month.
I have. So. I'm going to, while we're keep talking, I'm going to look up.
Okay. So here's and I know what you're looking up, because I'll tell you, I've had it for about a month now.
9 cents.
I made 2 weeks ago, I made 7 cents. Last week, I made zero. And this week, I just updated, I made 5 cents.
Oh, my God. Because the thing is, that's not how users use Instagram these days. No. Like, when was the last time you went to somebody's page and just scrolled through their entire profile?
No, if it's someone new that you're, you know, checking out to see if you want to follow them, I'll go and scroll through maybe their first 5 or 6 posts. But
yeah. It's
nobody's got time for that.
So. Yeah. Dom, are you kind of like me then when it comes to monetizing your Instagram page? The only way to do it is through just like brand partnerships?
I mean, there's, you know, Instagram's introduce this, you know, subscriptions, but which I think is great depending on what your content is and what your niche is. But like,
yeah, no, I've always felt weird. He's gonna
pay $4.99 a month to like get by. I have no behind the scenes, like, what you're getting on my day to day content is it. That's what I got. Like, I don't have
well, and it's also like a chicken and egg thing because. Yeah. In order to justify the time to create all of that behind the scenes content to make it worthwhile, you need people who are willing to give you that $4.99. Well, so
that's the other thing, right? Like, you start up, you know, for $2.99 a month and you get 100 people sign up, which I think would be pretty good.
Yeah.
You're making $300 a month, but like now you need to make all this content to justify that $300. Mm-hmm. It's
right.
Yes. Yes. It's doesn't really
so basically the only way that you're able to run the business is basically doing brand partnerships and stuff. So how do you go about getting those? Are they predominantly brands that reach out to you? Do you reach out to them? Do you have an agent? How do you do that?
Yeah. So I do reach out to brands when I find a brand that I want to work with. Sometimes it works out. Sometimes it doesn't. A lot of times when you're the one reaching out, I think you guys know that a lot of times the brand's a little like, hey, you know, what are you doing? Like, don't reach out to us. Like,
don't reach out to you.
When, exactly.
It's like, it's like when you were selling charcuterie boards door to door. For me, it's been like, you know, maybe 10% of brands I've reached out to have been interested in working with
me. Oh, dude, mine's lower than that.
You think so? Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I think I have very low self-esteem, so I get discouraged really quickly. So I think when I first started doing Instagram, I reached out to like 30 companies all at once. And I heard back from maybe one or two.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, I'm just not gonna do outreach anymore.
I don't think I've reached out to a company in 2.5 years.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
It's most of my deals are from them reaching out to me.
Right.
The vast majority. But I feel like there's nothing to lose reaching out. Even if you know what? Most likely it's going to be a no if you even get an answer. But I have, you know, gotten a couple good deals. Well, more than a couple good deals by me making that initial contact.
Well, that's good to know.
Right. A couple of times, even it was initially a no. But, you know, down the road, a few months later, they reached out back to me again. So, I mean, there's really no harm. The worst they can say is, you know what, we're not interested. Or if they want to be, you know, nice and put in a nice way, they'll tell you, you know, we don't have any campaigns going on right now. And
our budget's
I heard that one a lot.
Our budget is used up for the year. And,
but so you're all on Instagram. You have not gotten into the YouTube game yet.
So,
well, you have a channel.
I have a channel. I have like 1,000 subscribers. No, I have like full.
Oh, you do?
Like, yeah, I do. Yeah. I have like.
Is it the staining video?
That's Vic. Vic has like the 9-minute staining video.
I didn't know if you took Vic's 9-minute staining video.
I've got like most of my videos have like 100, 300 views. I have a couple that have done okay. I think my best one is like 40,000 views, which is like nothing world. But
that's
one. That's one video. It's not like they're all getting that. That's right. And you want to know the funny thing? That one video is it's sponsored content.
Oh, interesting.
For a brand deal. And it's funny the amount of brands that are interested in getting YouTube content from me, knowing that my YouTube reach is very small.
Interesting. Right? But they must see that one video and be like, well. And, I find with brands, you know, you never know what's going on behind the scenes with the brand. Yeah. They might have some partnership with Home Depot where they're looking to show that they're out there, like, you know, our product is available. You can get it at Home Depot. And there's like, I don't know. I'm trying to think of a good example of this because I've had this recently a couple times where companies will be like, well, we just want to show Home Depot that we're taking our advertising game seriously. So we are spending money on YouTube to prove to Home Depot or to Lowe's or something like that that we're out there pushing the product, which is exclusively available at Home Depot.
Yeah. I feel like too, some brands are savvy enough to realize that the content on YouTube has legs more than Instagram or TikTok. And I may have 1,000, you know, subscribers now, but they're almost sort of like hedging their bets that if this guy ends up with 100,000 subscribers, that video that has 150 views today might end up with, you know, 100,000 views down the road.
Yep. Right. They look at your Instagram and they're like, oh, this guy's capable of building an audience. So we're going to, you know, get in on early on the YouTube thing with him.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah. And especially, I mean, I'm case of this. I've talked to you guys about this before. I've had YouTube videos that were literally over 3 years old that out of nowhere, they've gone, you know, the first 3 years had like 1,000 views.
Yeah.
That's how my most popular video on YouTube is. I'm at like 2.5 million views, and I got those literally 2.5 million views on that video in like 3 months.
Yeah.
4 months. But after the video has been out for almost 4 years.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's insane. Like, you've got an opportunity.
That's the beauty of YouTube. And I've said to a lot of people as well that I wish in hindsight the time and effort I put into growing my Instagram, I had put into growing my YouTube.
Yeah.
Right.
Because but it's not too late.
No, it's not. It's definitely not too late. No.
And especially you've got a lot of humor to your personality. People would eat that up on YouTube. You know, you add some funny voiceovers to the stuff that you're doing, some, you know, dry humor and jokes and stuff. People would be all over that, like making woodworking funny, right? People love that. People would watch it not even to see, because they don't care what you're building. They just want to see what.
Yeah, they goofy just want humor. They want to be entertained, and
right.
Yeah,
I think that's sort of the mix that you want to try to aim for with any social media pages. You want to, you know, have some educational content, but you want people to be entertained, because you could be the best at what you do, but if it's boring, nobody's going to care.
It's like watching a Nova documentary in science class as a kid. But then you got Bill Nye, right? Bill Nye's a character. Well, he's entertaining you, but he's teaching you. You know,
we had the knockoff of Bill Nye up here in Canada called Beakman.
Yeah.
What? You guys didn't have Bill Nye?
Well, we had Bill Nye, but we also had Beakman.
In Canada, for every like famous American there is, there's a knockoff Canadian version 100%. Of that.
Yeah.
Right? Like you guys had Mr. Rogers.
Yeah.
We had Mr. Dress Up.
Yes.
Mr. Dress Up. What? I've got to look this character up.
Here's the way Canadian TV works. They see what works in the US and they're like, oh, we'll just do that, but over here. Okay. And then they
Mr. Dress Up's getting put on the list down here.
Oh, no doubt.
Well, he had a tickle trunk.
He did have a tickle trunk. That's right.
Oh, that could be a title. One where they visit tickle trunk.
But you know what? Another point about working with brands that in Canada is a little bit more difficult is we're in a lot of cases we're working with the Canadian branch of a brand, right? Mm-hmm. The Canadian office, and the budgets are not the same as the U.S. branch of that brand.
Oh, that's interesting, because I've actually always kind of felt the opposite. I felt that we're kind of lucky to be in a smaller market, because a lot of the time I find that there's not, you know, let's say somebody wants to do, you know, a power tool with an Instagram content creator. There's only like, I don't know, 10, 20 of us in Canada, but in the US you might have 200 people that you can work with, right?
Yeah, but I just I find the budgets are smaller.
Interesting.
That the brand has to work with, or at least they say they have to work with, because I mean, I'll compare, you know, brands that don't have a Canadian branch. So you're working directly with the U.S.
Yes.
office. And they seem to have more money in their pockets than the Canadian ones do.
Yeah. Mm.
So do you foresee spending or to really, really, really diving in on the Instagram? Or is that something you're slowly backing off of and pivoting somewhere? Like, where is 2024 headed for you?
Yeah, no, I'd like to do, again, I'd like to do more with YouTube because mm-hmm. I feel like I can take things into my own hands with YouTube and take control of what I'm earning there if I put the time and effort in. Whereas with Instagram, again, it's sort of like I do well there, but the control is not with me. Like I said, that can all go away tomorrow. And what am I left with?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I have a big following, but it's worthless.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
If there's no built-in mechanism to monetize it, it makes it extremely challenging.
Yeah.
YouTube has that.
That's right. And that's where I'd like to, put more of my focus for this year and try to grow that, because then you're not as reliant on brands. Like if you get a brand deal, great. But if you don't, you're still getting paid. That's right.
Yes. Yeah. So there's at least a little bit of a baseline. And I also feel like YouTube, when I posted an ad on Instagram, I felt like I was kind of fighting the platform a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Like you post an ad and it'll just like tank. It'll do horribly. Yeah. And it's like, it that hurts your leverage when you go to bargain for your next deal. Whereas on YouTube, like you're earning money by getting views, they're earning money by you getting views. So you're kind of aligned on that, right? Yeah. Like you both want to get views.
Yeah. Right. That is one thing I found with YouTube. The few, sponsored videos that I've done there, it hasn't hurt me by marking them as sponsored. Whereas, Instagram, you put, paid promotion and you're done. You just turn off your phone for the next week because you're not getting no notifications. Nobody's.
Yeah. Right? Well, it's interesting. Like people see that paid thing and they just keep scrolling on Instagram, but on YouTube, it's kind of just standard fare. You get the little disclaimer at the start of the video. Every single video I've ever put out, in the last 2 or 3 years has one of those, right?
Yeah.
And it's default for me now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just click the box. It doesn't even matter. Like I don't think about it, but on Instagram, I'm like, oh, I had to check this box. It's going to kill the engagement on this post.
Yeah.
So do you change the name of the podcast from For the Gram to For the Tube?
We might
in 2024.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell people about, for people who don't know, this is a podcast actually worth listening to. Unlike the Green Suitors podcast available on Apple and Spotify. Tell them about For the Gram.
Yeah. For the Gram. We, it's myself and Vic, the Stump Shop. I think most people are probably familiar with them. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like what you guys do. We just, chat and talk about our experiences with, social media. I mean, it's called For the Gram, but we talk about everything from Instagram to, our experience on TikTok and trying to, find our way on YouTube and, a whole bunch of other stuff, The Rock and
you guys are a lot funnier than we are though.
Why Eric scuba dives in his garage and all kinds of stuff.
And you guys were nice enough to pick my intro. I recorded an intro for them. They use my intro every once in a while.
Yeah, we use it all the time.
I know.
Yeah.
What about the Micro Machines guy? He's got a pretty good intro.
The other guy. Yeah, he's I don't know. That guy's a little bit too like. It sounds like it's a cage match is coming up. He's got a really intense.
It's a good show though. It's a good show. And did you bring Zach on episode yet? Or am I the only
one? No, I've never got the invite, the exclusive golden ticket.
We're going to have an all Canadian episode.
The Canadian powerhouse episode.
Yeah.
Well, but like I said, I think I mentioned to you in the podcast when you came on ours, that you need to come up here and we can have like a big, four-way podcast up at my cottage/cabin/lake house.
We need to do an entire podcast full of would you rather questions. You got any for me tonight, Tom?
I don't. I didn't come prepared with any would you rathers.
Maybe for the after show. We can do some good would you rathers.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
So I got a question for you. If you had to restart everything, so go back to like you just started woodworking again, what things would you do differently? Would you immediately jump on social media? Would you never get on social media? Would you go for small orders? Would you go for furniture? What do you think you would do?
That's a good question. I think I do a lot the same. Like I just said, I'd spend more time on YouTube,
mm-hmm.
right? Like I can't complain about how Instagram has gone, but again, like I look back and say, you know, if in 2016 I had started on YouTube the way I did on Instagram, where would I be, you know, now?
You have a mm-hmm. million subscribers.
Right. So that's one thing I would definitely change. Again, when I started out, that wasn't my intention, which is why I didn't,
right.
you know, start with YouTube, right? I think now somebody starts up a social media account and their goal from day one is to make money and to be, you know, an influencer. That was not the goal in 2016. So,
well, it was a different landscape back then,
yeah,
right?
Very different.
I got into Instagram because I was like, it's easier. I was like, I can't talk to a camera and like edit a whole video, but I could take photos of the things I build. Yeah. Right. So
that's right. And that's exactly it. I mean, my whole reason for doing it was let me take a picture of this thing that I made and post it on Instagram and say, hey, here's, you know, if anybody's interested in this or if I can make you another one or which YouTube wouldn't have done that for me at that point.
No. My entire goal was starting was trying to sell this. The joke I always tell people is if you scroll all the way back on YouTube, my first video is how to make concrete coasters, right? So like a drink coaster made out of concrete.
Yeah.
Dude, I tried to sell those so much on Instagram. I didn't sell a single damn concrete coaster.
I've never actually watched that video. Did you reinforce the concrete with something so they didn't break apart?
No.
Did you put like little pieces of rebar inside your coasters?
I used rebar toothpicks.
Are they still on your coffee table?
Hell no. Wait, I actually might still have some in this drawer.
Did you at one point did you have like hundreds of these concrete coasters?
Oh, I had like a 27 gallon because there's one behind me, like a Rubbermaid tote, which is probably about 2 feet by 2 feet by 3 feet full of these concrete coasters.
The floor sagged in his room.
Yeah, there's a permanent dent in the floor where he used to store them. Eric, I think that would be like a great gift that you could give to your most hardcore and loyal fans.
Oh,
is like send them out like an Eric Spensley concrete coaster.
See, what I would do is I'd go to friends' houses and just bring like 8 to 10 of them and just like pop them up on their coffee table and not say anything. And then I'd leave because I didn't have the heart to throw them out. And then like I got some buddies who are like these damn concrete coasters. Like they're like, I can't get rid of them because they work well. I'm like, you want to buy them? They're like, no, you already gave them to me. But I mean, it was one of those like. I got like a $6 silicone mold on Amazon and then a $15 bag of Quikrete. And I'm like,
oh, yeah,
I am cleaning up on this transaction. Right.
That's the same as the pallet wood, right? It's the same thing. True. You think that I'm going to sell these coasters for $25 each. I'm going to make a fortune.
What was your price point on them?
I think I was selling four of them for like $18 or something.
Okay, that's not bad. I mean, that's reasonable. That for a set of coasters. Yeah.
Yeah. But who wants a big piece of concrete just hanging out?
That's the way the mind works. Like, you're thinking that this is a surefire, like, you're retiring and you're like pulling your yacht in right next to Bill Gates.
What do you do, build Microsoft? I sold a bunch of concrete coasters, you idiot.
It could be one of those fads, like those stupid plastic fidget spinners.
Oh,
like, how'd you retire? The concrete industry.
My friend literally got me a concrete—not a concrete coaster, a fidget spinner. Last weekend, when I saw him, he flew up from New York and he bought a box of these and he gave one to all of the guys on this trip that we went on.
What, does he hate you?
No, I think he knows that we're all just very like ADHD kind of guys. He was like, "This will keep them calm throughout the weekend, and then they won't bug me so much."
Man. Imagine if we could have made pallet wood fidget spinners.
Oh, I bet somebody did.
I bet you could with a laser cutter. Don, you got that laser cutter right there.
Your logo, your slogan could have been "Get a splinter with every spin."
I like
it. Make it out of the full size boards too, and just spin it over your head.
Yeah, you know what I started doing with that laser actually. Speaking of, because Zach brought up the idea of giving away the coasters to your followers, I started a while back. Every now and then when I have time, I'll do it. I'll burn someone's face into a piece of toast, and then I cast the slice of toast in epoxy, and then I mail it to them without them knowing it's coming.
Oh, that's funny.
So when they open it up, it's like their face on a piece of toast.
What kind of toast is it? Is it rye, wheat, it's just white like, bread,
like Wonder Bread,
Dempster's?
Yeah,
right. I don't know. Oh, yeah. I don't think they have Wonder Bread. I think that's a Canadian.
Oh, is that a Canadian thing? I was going to say
no, Dempster's. No. We got Wonder Bread. I guess
you guys have Wonder Bread.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
do you guys have Dempster's?
I don't know. I'm not a
big so Dempster's big maybe is the Canadian one. Yeah,
I think Dempster's is Canadian.
Yeah,
one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh. But what you have to do is put a bag of milk in there.
Do you guys have Coca-Cola in the U.S.?
No.
Only Pepsi.
No? Only Pepsi.
Dr. Pepper.
Yeah, Dr. Pepper. Dr.
Pepper down here.
the bag of milk. Yeah.
What's with the bag of milk?
I don't know. It's great. You buy a bunch of bags in a bag, and then you put them in a little container, cut the corner, and you're good to go.
Yeah. You got to buy a special container. That's the thing, is you need a whole special container.
Oh, there's a great, if you could make a concrete milk bag holder, you'd clean
done.
It.
Done. You would I'm dominate make everything out of concrete.
Yeah.
You know what's funny? The first time I went down to workbench with Vic and Mark, so we drove down.
Right?
Was this
going.
The time you guys Mark got abducted in Ohio?
No, wow, yeah. Mark. Almost got abducted. Everybody was fine. But we drove down, and Mark thinks it's going to be hilarious to bring a bag of milk. So we meet up like the Wednesday or Thursday morning at like 4:30 a.m. to start this drive. He shows up with the container with a bag of milk in it. Like, what the fuck are you doing with this bag of milk? I'm going to bring it down. It's going to be hilarious. And everybody, like the Canadian guys with the bag of milk. Nobody laughed. No,
nobody gave a shit, did they?
And like by day two, he's so mad. He's like, this fucking bag of milk. Like, what was I thinking bringing this bag?
I can't imagine Mark getting mad, though.
Everybody was just basically like, dude, why are you walking around with a bag of milk for? I don't get it.
It's a big gag gift.
Yeah.
So are you going back this year? I know you didn't go last year. Are you going this year?
No, going this year. No.
Damn. Yet.
So your review is overpriced, not worth it for you specifically?
Yeah. So here's my honest take on Workbench.
Ooh. I'm sure it's no different than ours.
Here, get ready to clip this and make it into the Instagram video.
It's a really, really, really fun time. But I find that there's a lot that they could do to make it more worth what you're spending and give you more value for
100%.
For what the cost is for that trip. I mean,
$700 for a ticket.
Yeah.
And you don't even need a concrete
coaster. It's like $1,000 for us.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I look at Workbench. I get little to no value from the actual organization that puts on Workbench. But just talking to the other creators is where I find the value of it.
That's and also, what it is. It's in having those, you know, those conversations, you know, after the event or outside of the event at the bar, while you're having lunch. That's where the value for me is. And that's where I'd go every year if I could afford it for those conversations, right? For that. Right. The actual, you know,
it is.
I mean, like I've gone to all the courses, and you know what? There was a couple that I really, really liked that I felt like I learned something from, but you know, I just, it depends. There's value there for some people. Maybe if you're starting out and you want some help, I also think it's a little bit deceiving that it's sort of marketed in a way that, if you're new and you're green, it's like, if you come down here, you're going to learn all the secrets. And I think a lot of people, you know, with 100 followers go there and spend that money thinking, oh man, when after this weekend, I'm going to have, you know, by March 30th, I'm going to have 100,000 followers and brands are going to be beating down my door to work with me. And right.
It's interesting.
Tricks. But
you definitely get tips and tricks. Really?
Yeah, 100%.
I think the first time I went to Workbench, I didn't really get that much out of it. And that was when I was very green. I was still very new to it. I was like trying to get my footing, figure things out. And then I missed a year because of COVID. And then I went back a year when I started to have, like, I had things a little bit more figured out. And that was the year that I think I got the most value out of it, which was last year. I think I learned so much just talking from other creators that I was able to apply to my own work, but I don't know. And I'm trying to think if I would recommend it to somebody who's very green, who's just starting out. Like, is the value there for them? I'm not sure.
Yeah. I mean, sorry, go ahead.
No, you go.
No, I was just going to, like, I went to one course the last time I was there, and you know, without naming any names, it was a very well-known social media personality running this course about how you can monetize your social media, right? So, of course, a lot of people are going to want to go to this. And you have, like, I'd say I'm like a mid-tier social media guy. I'm not big by any means, but I'm not the new guy. I kind of have learned my stuff. So I'm there thinking I'm going to pick up some good tips, but there's a lot of new green people there that want to learn, you know, how I'm going to make money on social media. So the social media personality proceeds to spend the next hour talking about all these things you can do, and they're just not achievable for somebody starting out, right? Like, they're talking about you can, you know, do this, you know, work with this brand, and they're going to pay you, you know, And they're using real numbers, which again are not attainable for somebody with 1,000 followers.
Right.
You know, this brand, you're going to charge them $4,000 to create this set of content for them. But then when you're creating this content, now you're going to take pictures of all this stuff, and now you can sell the pictures to magazines and stuff, and you can charge X amount of thousands of dollars to all these magazines for these pictures, like for the next 5 years. And then you can make plans and you can put them behind the paywall on your website, and people can come and you can charge them $25.99 for the plans. And it's just, if you're this person, maybe you can, even still the numbers that were being thrown out there, I would maybe dispute, but maybe you can get it. But it's not sound advice for somebody that's starting out. Like, you're leading them down the wrong path. You're leading them to a place where they're going to go home. They're going to try and do this. They're going to reach out to, you know, People Magazine with a picture of a of the cutting board they just made and say, hey, you want to buy this picture for $4,000 and I'll let you guys publish it in your magazine? It's right.
I think that the challenge is like, what audience do you cater to? So if you're catering towards an audience of folks that have just getting started, then there would be a lot of value in showing, hey, here's how you upload a reel to Instagram. Yeah. Here's how you edit the thumbnail on Instagram. Like, some people are going to find tremendous value in that.
Yeah.
But any of us here would be like, are you effing kidding me? Like, why am I there? But it makes it challenging because I would probably argue that there, in general, there are probably more folks who are newer and greener than there are people that have been doing this for several years there.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I've said that from the first year I went, is that I think they would benefit from having, you know, beginner courses. 100%. And state that that's what it is. It's a beginner course. This is what it's all about.
Yeah.
You have like, you know, mid-tier or like basic courses, and then you have like advanced courses, and let people decide what they're going to go to. Yeah.
The nuances of reading the analytics inside YouTube Studio. Like, okay.
That's not somebody who's
somebody who's starting out is going to be like, I don't even know what YouTube Studio is. Like, stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that is a serious complaint. And I think you're spot on, Dom. It's like they need to have some sort of grading system, like beginner, medium, you know, expert, whatever.
Yeah.
And yeah, it is. And it is like a pyramid there, you know, like there's a lot of people who are very green. And then there's the more advanced people. There's the people in the middle. And it's like, there's courses for everybody, but they don't make it clear who each one is for.
Yeah,
totally agree. Well, we're at an hour here for the main show, so I think we head over to the after show. But before we do that, I want to thank our newest patrons. We've got David Murphy.
Hell yeah.
It's that's Ryan Murphy's brother. Ryan Murphy's the director of a bunch of shows on Netflix, right?
Oh, it's definitely his brother then.
I think it's
probably getting scouted for our own Netflix movie right now.
Can you imagine that? A horror series on Netflix? It could be all the ghost stories that we would reenact from our childhood.
Oh, yeah. That was the gag from one of the very first episodes was ghost stories, I think, right?
Yeah, I think so. Is it like episode 3 or 4? The one where they see ghosts or something. But then, listen to this. We got Keith Johnson?
What?
Huh?
Yeah.
Never heard of him. Recognize that name at all.
Never heard of him.
At
Keith Johnson Custom Woodworking.
Huh. Sounds like a dog person.
Yeah, I'm not familiar.
Sounds like somebody who's just looking to plug their social media.
Yeah, he's probably trying to plug KJ Sawdust and Shop Sounds podcast and all these other shows. But huge shout out to our new patrons, David Murphy, and then I guess Keith Johnson. You know, well, there's room for everyone, I guess. But we also want to give a huge shout out to all of our top tier patrons who are helping keep the lights on. Renee, you'll like this, Dom, also known as the Goblin Spanker. We've got Dan Armendariz, Luke Schmidt, Josh at Freedom Workshop. Josh is coming down to WorkbenchCon, by the way.
Sure is. I know. I'm looking forward to meeting him in person.
Corey Duvall and Dadu. So huge shout out to all of our patrons. If you want to support the show, unlock the after show and tons of other stuff. Ooh, like that Cam Tools gift card. Let's go to patreon.com/offthecutpodcast because that's the only way that you can help us defeat the Green Series podcast. But you can also go to...
So when are we doing that next drawing?
Ooh, beginning of March.
Beginning of March, so get in now.
Exciting. Yeah.
But you can also go to patreon.com/forthegrampodcast.
Sure can.
And check out their show. So, Dom, you're on every streaming service. You're on Apple, Spotify, everything.
Yeah
we're go on check out For all the Gram.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah,
you guys are a lot funnier than we are.
I don't know about that. We have good days and bad days.
Well, anyway, go check out Dom, support what he's doing, and everybody, thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week.
See you next week, everybody.
See ya.
I won't see you next week. Have a good time.